all my life, I had to fight. Y'all, I've been working since I graduated from college. One look at my resume, and you know that I've been a CEO 10 times over, a creative director. I've worked for a sitting governor. I've run for U.S. Senate. With my work experience came so much wisdom and understanding of how the workplace works or doesn't work, especially for Black women. I can code switch up and down, take space in any room I'm in, and find my own seat at the table. But my ability to do this is rooted in as much strife as striving, as much grit as grace. If I had to do it all over again, there are so many things I wish I could tell the young, doe-eyed me, heck, even the older, more mature me, too. And not just me. I want to let all Black women know what's out there in that work world. Give them some warnings, good advice, some strategy on how to not only survive, but thrive in the workplace. So guess what, y'all? That's exactly what we're going to do right here and right now. From WBEZ Chicago, this is When Magic Happens. I'm Cheryl Jackson here with Jennifer Shayla Bowers and Taylor Coward. This episode is dedicated to all the Black women who are trying to find their place in the workspace. This is for those who want to put the work it girl into the workplace. Get your pen and paper out because, honey, you don't want to miss these tips we've got for you. All that and more after the break.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, y'all ready?
Yeah.
Ready? Let's go. Let's go. Let's start with this. First big girl jobs. Okay. Let's talk about it. Jennifer, what was your first big girl job?
All right. My first big girl job, it was actually a temporary position at CNN because I had moved to Atlanta right after school to get into the entertainment industry. And my first temporary position was with Pat Mitchell, who was an executive at CNN. And basically, I was filling in temporarily for her executive assistant. And man, it was the most fascinating experience, mainly because it was really interesting to witness how people really kind of move around, like even an executive assistant, you know, how they treat her in order to get to the person that they wanted to connect with. I thought that was really interesting. And she used to communicate with lots of different people. But I do remember one day when Harry Belafonte called her. And I was like, you mean like the Harry Belafonte?
Right, right, right.
And so it was just really a very interesting kind of first experience in a corporate space, but at a very sort of high level, you know, witnessing what the experience was for her, who she interacted with, how I managed that. And it was a little stressful, you know, because you didn't want to, you know, take down the wrong number or connect them to the right, you know, like it was a very interesting way to start that experience. So that was my first job.
How did it make you feel working in that corporate environment?
Like, you know, I thought it was interesting. I mean, the one thing I think I realized immediately is that it was about sort of figuring people out, you know, like who actually wants to connect with me because they're actually genuinely interested in learning about Jennifer, or are they doing this because they want to have a connection to and get a meeting with this person, you know? And so really, I think the lesson that I learned in that environment was about personalities and intention. You know, what are people's real intentions? And not that I got it all in that one, you know, experience, but it certainly was a sort of glimpse into what I'd experience in corporate America going forward.
Right. Yep. Things to come.
Yeah.
It was foreshadowing. What about you, Taylor?
My first job out of college was full time for a local government office. And it just was like the pressure is on. Like,
it was
very front facing, like customer service facing role. So, you know, I'm talking to people from, I think we opened at like 8. So I'm talking to people from like 8 in the morning to when we close around 5. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's government. So you can't hang up on people. Mm-hmm. You got to let people say their piece. And so it would be people that disagreed with things and would be upset with me. One guy we had was really scary. He was just like a kind of like very intense racist. And I said, sir, I do have caller ID. And I do see that you're calling me from Las Vegas. And I also want you to know that I'm a Googler. So I do see that you're calling from your real estate business. And I think you should stop calling here.
Ooh.
And that was the first time that, like, I kind of, because I was told, like, this is like a public service.
Right.
People have the right to call here. But when you're harassing.
Right.
It got to a point where I was like, no. So I made a file.
Drew a boundary.
Yeah. I made a file about him in the system that we use there. I found him and his wife's pictures. I put them in the file. His address was in there. I put that in the file. And because it was the first time I was like, whoa. It showed me what government can be like in mm-hmm. those front-facing roles that, like, when you become a public servant, you are exposed to the public.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that being something like a career path,
mm-hmm.
those are things to consider. And so that was a wake-up call in that regard, too.
You had to also deal with some internal strife.
Yeah, yeah. And
talk
like,
about it.
You mean like people I worked with or myself?
People you work with.
Oh, yeah. So I was I was the youngest person there, and it was just tough, mm-hmm. you know, because people have worked longer than me because they're older than me and have been in the world longer. And so they take that to mean that I don't know anything or shouldn't know anything. And so that's something that I deal with at this age and in the workplace. And so that is tough, but I feel like it helped me build up my skin to that. And so I fought through it, and I still think the experience was valuable because I learned a lot about myself. I learned what things I don't like in the workplace, mm-hmm. and I learned what things I do like. And so I try to just take things as learning experiences, and that was that one.
It's interesting. I think your first job, mm-hmm. you learned the power and the importance of drawing boundaries.
Mm.
Even though your job was the customer is always right, you know, it was forward-facing,
mm-hmm.
Customer-facing job. But still, you have a right to draw a personal boundary.
And that's hard.
Yeah.
Like, you want it to be accessible. You want people to, like, I know I'm a hard worker, but... And I think the Gen Z really gets into this of like the boundary of being a hard worker and then being taken advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for a long time, you know that you can overwork 20 to 24 year olds and underpay them and not give them benefits,
mm-hmm.
and like just run them into the ground. And I think my generation is starting to stand up and be like, hey, I'm young, but I deserve a non-toxic work environment.
Mm-hmm.
I deserve to get paid adequately. Mm-hmm. I deserve to have benefits. And that's like a thing right
and
now.
I know it is. And I'm glad to see that.
Mm-hmm.
And it took your generation to set a bar, what's acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I think it's the impact of that is kind of a rising tide lifts all boats, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's a contribution I see your generation is making to the workplace is
a more holistic, kind of looking at the employee more holistically and not just as a worker.
A workhorse.
Yeah, workhorse.
Yeah.
Exactly. What did you learn? What was your impression of what you're not going to put up with? Okay. what I'm not going to do. What is that?
That it's not okay for people to talk to you poorly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I think for a lot of roles, you have to just like put it aside and just go with it. But it's not okay.
Mm.
And no matter the station or how high or low someone is on a totem pole, you just have to bring respect to all people in a work environment.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I'm not feeling respected, I now feel more empowered to say something about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it took going through that experience. And so now, like, I'm going to say something. I may not feel comfortable about it,
mm-hmm.
but I will feel more uncomfortable if I don't say anything and continue to get mistreated.
That's awesome. Awesome to learn that powerful lesson so young and early in your career. That is awesome, Taylor.
But but it hurt. It's like triggering. Like when I found out we were doing this episode, I was like,
girl, I was triggered. Okay. This episode is needs to be discussed, needs to be held because of what I believe Black women are dealing with in these workplaces and corridors. What about you, Jennifer? What are sort of the impressions that you had with that first big job? You know, what's for you and what you're not going to do? Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know what I wish? I wish that I had that perspective, you know, because I think it was a lot about like, oh, I'll do anything. I'll stay late. I won't get paid a lot because I want the experience. I want the opportunity to try to thrive in this environment, you know, and I don't want to be pushed out for any reason. And so I think I was willing to accept all things for fear of that, you know? And so I wish that my viewpoint was different, but it also was a little bit of a different time because that wasn't even like, it's like, okay, well, that's fine. There's 10,000 of you other people who would love to do this, you know? Right. And so, and would be fine with accepting the circumstances that, you know, this job currently entails. So I think that definitely, you know, I love that perspective. I think what I also learned, this sort of heightened sense, particularly in that role, like this heightened sense of professionalism and almost perfection, you know, where I was really kind of like afraid to do something wrong. But it's kind of like when you're learning, you are going to make mistakes. And as opposed to being in a culture where, like, you know, the lesson is learning, it's like, don't mess up or you'll be replaced, you know? And so there was some fear in messing up. And I think what that did is it kind of, it's a little triggering too, you know, because you don't feel freedom enough to ask the dumb question, even though there's no dumb questions, you know, like it's just, it's different. It was a different.
I still think that might be the experience. Like I'm working on not letting myself get taken advantage of. But I probably stay too late working. I probably wake up too early to start working because I still have that fear of like someone else could and wants to do this. So like I need to be on it. And I'm like, is that a pressure that Black women put on themselves? Is that the pressure that young workers put on themselves? Like I'm thinking of like, where does that come from? Because I think it does still persist and that creeps into my head. So
I think it's a culture, like American. You know, the culture of an environment. Well, I think maybe a both. I think our culture as a country, right, and this really sort of capitalist-driven, you know, environment where every hurry, 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 rush, 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 lots of money, be super productive, blah, 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 you know, but not really focused on the person always. You know, I think there has been a little bit of a shift in that. And I think it's a company culture too. You know,
so,
some cultures are conducive to that and some are not.
Yep.
The one thing that I see and the data shows this, that you have lots of women entering the workplace early in careers. And so there is certainly parity in numbers mm-hmm. to men. The problem really begins to show itself mm-hmm. as women seek to climb the ladder. They get, that's where all hell starts to really break loose. Mm-hmm. So, and you have to, you know, feel the pressure of perfectionism, mm-hmm. work twice as hard to be seen as, you know, qualified or to justify mm-hmm. your presence in a role. I tell you, with my first big jobs, mm-hmm. the takeaway, you know, was probably even more pronounced of what you all talked about. I learned that I had to take the licks. Mm. I had to take the hits and not let it show. Mm. Not only did I have to take the licks and the hits and keep going, I had to signal to the culture, the leadership, that it was tolerable. I had to signal to them that it was okay in order to have more opportunities.
And that's not sustainable.
And that's so toxic and not sustainable. So there is no room for error. Yeah. There is no room for mistakes. There is no room to learn a learning curve. There's no room, especially for women and particularly for Black women. Mm-hmm. And also, there's no room for humanity. You cannot say, I'm hurting, I'm upset.
Being a person.
I cannot show up and be a person.
Yeah.
So you can't do that. And then you have to let them know that, make them feel comfortable mm-hmm. with who you are.
Yeah.
So that's what I took away when I was coming up.
Have y'all ever cried at work? Speaking of being a person in the workplace.
No.
No. And
here's mm-hmm. the thing.
I went to the bathroom, but yeah. nobody would know.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
But I think that goes to what you just said of like, you cannot show your humanity. Like, crying is a weakness, is what we're feeling, possibly, inherently. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you can't, in some environments, it's so dog-eat-dog. You cannot show.
You can't do that.
You can't show emotion. You can't show feeling. And then at the end of the day, it's like, you can't show our womanhood. Like, because then it gets weaponized against us. Like, I think one day at work I had cramps and I was like, let me look tough all day.
Oh Lord.
I don't have cramps. Cause I'm like, that could get used against me. And that's ridiculous.
Well, I was told, when I was in high school, I had really bad dysmenorrhea, all of that really. Mm-hmm. And, this older woman said, you know, suck it up. What do you think? Someone's going to give you a day off for that? I mean,
well, maybe an ibuprofen.
Nothing. I was told, suck it up. And I was given tips for not crying. If you think you're about to get emotional, cry, take in a cup of water. Mm-hmm. And when the frog comes in your throat, grab that cup and start drinking.
Wow.
What I learned in the press secretary job, this is so bad.
Uh-huh.
But and afterwards of being grilled. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was such an isolating, toxic experience. Mm-hmm. What I would do is I would pinch myself. Mm. One day I came home at the end of the day, took off my clothes, changing clothes, looked at my arm. It was black and blue from the wrist all the way up. I had pinched myself to keep from showing emotion. This has got to stop.
Negative coping mechanisms is for the workplace.
Yes.
But that means something is wrong with the workplace.
Something is definitely wrong. We know something is wrong with the workplace. The mm-hmm. workplace, I think it needs to be said, there is absolute trauma happening in the workplace. Mm-hmm. Probably for everyone.
Yeah.
But it is super acute for Black women. Mm. And it's been going on for a long time. And this is, we've got to put an end to it. But in the meantime, you know, changing culture mm-hmm. is like hard.
Yeah.
But in the meantime and in between time, okay, mm-hmm. we got to arm women, okay? We have to arm us battle our way through, love our way through,
yep.
grace ourselves through it, grit our way through it. I think we know a lot about grit. We've got to really focus on grace.
Mm-hmm.
How do we operationalize grace in our lives? What has been your experience with the isms in the workplace?
I hate to say luckily, but really it's mostly been ageism.
Mm-hmm. And that tracks with data.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're just entering the workplace, so your real issues with sexism and racism are not going to start happening.
They'll come later.
Yeah, they're coming. Trust They'll and believe.
Mine happened early.
Right. They're coming, though. For you, it's you. As soon as you start to flex on them,
yeah.
okay, and get promotions, start to go up the career ladder. But early on, you're right. So talk about it, the ageism.
You know, I think the other two,
mm-hmm.
I built up a tolerance to coming up in school,
mm-hmm.
Particularly in the selective enrollment situation for high school.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being around people that think they're better than you just because of their race. Or think that they're better than you. I think we need to throw classism in there, too.
Yeah, that's another one. Classism.
And so I kind of built up a tolerance for that. And I'm the same age as everybody else, so I'm not experiencing ageism. So workplace was when ageism hit. And it's just like, well, what did you do to get this job?
And people looked at you because of your youth. You're okay.
And...
Well, let me tell you.
and especially in schools, it was confusing. Mm-hmm. When I was teaching in schools, teachers would be like, you don't know none, girl. You know, like, you ain't been here long enough and mm-hmm. da, da, da. And some of that is true. Like, you got to go around the block to learn some things. And I get that. But I also feel that I bring something to the table by
Absolutely.
Connecting with students in a way. Because I just was in the time and place that they were just in.
Right.
And so I can relate to them on that level. I can provide advice on that level. And so I feel that there are times where my contributions aren't valued and aren't mm-hmm. even considered just because of my age.
Did that impact your confidence or mm-hmm. your self-worth? Talk about that.
I think I really resonated with Jennifer's executive assistant story because it reminded me of my personal pressures that I felt.
Mm-hmm.
That pressure to be perfect. People are waiting on you to mess up because you're young. And so, like, you had to be perfect. So, like, my government job, my notes were so tight. Like, people that would go and look back at them now, you would know exactly what was happening in that case. Because I felt that people were looking and waiting on me to mess up.
So you overcompensated. You overperformed.
Yep. Yeah.
To try and blunt that.
Because
criticism.
I'm like, I'm not giving you a reason to like mess with me or not hire somebody else young. Like,
because right.
mm-hmm. there's this perception that Gen Z is lazy and that we don't know anything and we don't want to work. And I'm like, I'm worker bee. Like, I work. And I just was like, yeah, you're not going to catch me slipping. Like,
right.
but then mm-hmm. that puts this pressure on you to be perfect. Mm-hmm. That puts a pressure on you to overperform, like you said. And so that can be toxic in itself.
You then define your value in being a worker bee.
And in your product, you're like...
Well, in being a worker bee, in that...
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
On Curious City, every listener's question leads to a surprising story. Whether it's the history behind Chicago's folk scene, fashion industry, or the worst year in sports we've ever had. Uncover more of Chicago's hidden stories wherever you get your podcasts.
My value is in being a worker bee versus the queen bee,
True.
The leader.
True.
And so that's how they keep women in these roles where you're behind the scenes,
mm-hmm.
you're pushing someone else, you're always, you know, overlooked.
Mm-hmm.
You get rewarded for your worker bee,
mm-hmm.
but you don't get rewarded for advancements and leadership roles.
I'm in a phase where I am open to paying my dues. And so I guess I don't consider myself a worker bee, but I consider myself a hard worker.
Yeah.
And like, I want to pay my dues. I want to learn and I want to see my evolution. Like, I want to look, back and see an evolution.
You want to know that your hard work is going to pay
off. It's for something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Instead of, yeah, mm-hmm. I totally get that. I totally get that.
But it's like you said earlier, eating things. How many dings and how many things do I have to eat? And then it's also like, but wait a minute. How many of these things shouldn't be happening at all?
At all. You never should have to swallow pain.
Yeah.
Never. That should never acceptable or expected.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just want everyone under the sound of my voice, you know what the preachers say.
Preacher.
Under the sound of my voice, do not be talked into or believe that you have to swallow pain to get along, to be promoted, to be accepted. Mm-hmm. That's a lie.
Mm.
I agree with that, not swallowing it. But what I would say is that a lot of these things, the isms,
mm-hmm.
and learning how to navigate the isms, is it also strengthens you. You know, mm-hmm. it's like working out. It's building a muscle, right? And so it's not necessarily, you know, swallowing it in a way that it, you know, you hold on to it and it continues to be something that you carry. But it's more about like, how do I learn from this? And as I said to you guys in the beginning, like for me, it was about navigating people, mm-hmm. right? And a lot of navigating people is dealing with these isms, you mm-hmm. know, is dealing with how do you navigate a situation where, okay, this person
do you have an experience that you can share with us?
Yeah, I have plenty.
Okay, girl, pick one.
I mean, I have plenty of them. I mean, one is, you know, even recently I was in this board meeting and I, you know, was explaining, actually at the very beginning of the conversation, I was observing this one gentleman in particular who I thought, wow, he is really strategic. He's got a lot of insight about how to enhance, you know, what it is that we're trying to accomplish, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I just felt like if he offered any comment in this conversation, it was going to be profound. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to present, I am, you know, sort of taking them through, you know, what's been accomplished, what's coming up, what, you know, to expect in the future, blah, 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 all that stuff. And at the end of my conversation and answering questions and all those things, he said, or not answering questions, because he was my first question. He goes, Jennifer, I don't have a question. I want to say this to you. And I was like, okay, ooh, this is going to be good. Okay. And he goes, you are so articulate. Mm. You're so articulate and so well-spoken.
Mm.
And I was like, you mean to tell me out of everything that I just said, that is the thing that struck you about so this conversation?
Yeah.
And what was frustrating about it is that what I realized in that moment is he didn't see me, you know, what he didn't hear me. He was really just in awe with the fact that I could communicate in the way in which I was communicating. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
he was filtering you through his stereotype of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How, as a black woman.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
And you didn't fit the bill. So it blew his mind.
Right. And however he did that, you know, whatever mm-hmm. That's what I've learned. And that's muscle that I've built is I don't care how you process me, you mm-hmm. know, mm-hmm. is like I've eliminated the concern for, you know, his understanding of me and just me continuing to move in that. And so it was interesting because, you know, my response to him was, oh, okay, well, thank you. Are there any other questions? Like, dude, we ain't about to sit here and harp on this. Let's actually have a real conversation about what it is that we're trying to accomplish strategically, you know?
Because that's irrelevant.
Right. And I think sometimes it's like, one, you know, almost being as dismissive to that person as they are to you, you know? And it's a little jarring, you know, for them, but they probably won't get it, but that's not even the point because what I've also discovered is I have attempted, and this is also why it's back to people, but I've also attempted always you know, being comforting and satiating the situation and you continuing to do it. And then it hitting a point where I'm like, absolutely not. Like mm-hmm. I had this woman who we were at this conference and we're, you know, basically I had just led like the beginning introduction for this big speaker. Right. Mm-hmm. And I came off of the podium and we're standing next to each other. We're listening to him. And she'd made comments, other kinds of comments like this before, but she goes, Jennifer, I just want to touch your hair. Mm-mm. And I was like, no,
no.
And I said it firmly and I said it confidently. It shocked her, right? And it shocked her because I think even in that environment, it's like, oh, she wouldn't dare say no to me in front of like me standing on the side of this thing. Mm-hmm. And I left it with that. Like I didn't explain. I didn't say why. You know, she went into her whole little tizzy about, you know, well, I just, I'm curious. No. And I turned back around. And so
that's great. Good for you. That's great.
But I mean, what I meant about not eating it. I think that's what I mean about eating it. Because eating it is saying, yeah, you can touch my hair, just to not, as to not cause a scene, as to not.
Exactly.
And that's and that's particularly when my definition of eating it is like, you know, something is wrong, but you don't want to ruffle feathers. You don't want to lose your job. So you just go with it.
Right. No, that's
and it. I feel like when you voice. So thank you for sharing that, because I feel like that is such a concrete example of what not to eat.
Right.
Don't let people
because
touch your hair.
What ends up happening is they like she'd already made little other attempts. Mm-hmm. She hadn't touched my hair, but she'd made other comments, you know? And so it was like in her mind, oh, we're cool. I'm comfortable with Jennifer, you know? And yeah, we're comfortable, but you don't see me going around wanting to touch your body. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like that
right.
is part of my body. You know, and I just,
I think one more ism.
Yes.
That's otherism.
What's that?
Otherism.
Like she's seeing you as, ooh, what is this thing that's saying these smart things with this curly hair? Like,
that's right.
That is like not seeing me as an equal. It's not seeing me as a whole person. That's like othering me and making me feel different by ogling me and trying to touch my hair.
Right. That's you're absolutely right. And oftentimes otherism is when you're being othered is a byproduct of sexism and racism, ageism, and all the isms that we know. But these shout out to you, Jennifer, for saying a flat out no without any explanation. So that's so empowering. And when you have your voice, it does empower you. But let's talk a little bit about the blowback. Okay, from when you are having your voice, you're standing in your value and your worth, and the blowback, the microaggressions, the constant. So Jennifer, I totally hear about you, when you say, you know, we strengthen our muscle. Let me tell you about the book that was written on grit, by Angela Duckworth, and, you know, saying basically grit is,
I read it. It's good.
It's a great book. It's true. You cannot,
book club.
You cannot be successful without being resilient. So that book was all about resilience, but my thing is this: Black women know a whole lot about resilience and grit. I mean, you can't show up and succeed in these workplaces without it. What we don't know is that grace part. When you're constantly in toxic work environment that's toxic to the very nature of who you are as a woman, as a Black person, or your age, things you cannot change, nor want to, but things you cannot change, and it's toxic to that. That's not sustainable. Even no matter how strong you get, no matter how strong the muscle is. So I'm on the back nine, of my career, and I'm here to tell you that me and my girlfriends, you get weary. The burnout doesn't come from doing your job and, you know, doing your job and accomplishing things and being productive and being excellent at your job. Mm-hmm. the burnout comes from the internal fight.
Yeah.
These toxic workplaces where you have to fight in order to, with internally in order to do your job externally. That's where the burnout comes from. That's where the microaggressions that eat away at your mental health. And yeah. I tell you, I'm very worried for the mental health and wholeness and wellness of Black women leaders.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things, and this is through going to a therapist, mm-hmm. right, is, you know, in any environment, you've got to navigate, you know, and one of the things that, you know, she sort of taught me to do and empowered me to do is think about how can I navigate it most authentically for me, where I can keep my joy, my soul, my happiness, all the things, mm-hmm. right? And one thing I heard actually was this concept of neutralize, mm-hmm. right? And a lot of times, and I am certainly one to do this because I am an emotional person, right? And I feel things. I feel in my intuition something's wrong. I feel like or can observe injustice and want to address it immediately. But there are some things that what I have just recently learned is that we need to neutralize that are unimportant, right? And it's kind of like deciding, you know, what are the things that I'm even going to give energy to, give units of energy to? Like, mm-hmm. I am not going to have another conversation with this woman about her touching my hair. The answer is no. I've neutralized it. I am moving on.
Yeah.
I'm not going to take that on. I'm not going to ingest it. I'm not going to make it a part of my experience. Mm-hmm. That's for her, you mm-hmm. know? Mm-hmm. And what I have learned is to just neutralize. I am only there to focus on the thing that is most connected and aligned with my purpose. And if a person or a process or a thing is not that thing, then I feel very sort of like they get no attention. Mm-hmm. They get no energy because that's what, by giving it energy, that's the thing that makes it so challenging for us. And so what I've just been taught to do is just neutralize it, mm-hmm. you know, and it's easier said than done because it's certainly something you have to practice because it's hard to do.
But it's
an exercise that changes what your experience can be. Yeah. You're in a toxic environment, but I'm about to thrive anyway. You know, I'm about to do this thing anyway because I want to do it, not because somebody's preventing me from doing it.
I think that's an excellent, tool to have in your toolbox to deal and to deal with adversity. I was working on a strategy, implementing a strategy, a function for a company, and I was this very senior leader. And in order to do my work, I had to work with other departments, colleagues, and peers in other departments. Well, they would go to the principal, we all reported to, complaining about me constantly. So luckily, this principal, you know, knew me and believed in me, was being fair-handed about this. Mm-hmm. And long story short, you know, he sort of push back on these other people, men. They're all white men, okay? So finally, one of them calls me, the one of my peers. He calls me, you know what, Cheryl? We've seen your kind before.
Oh.
You're just, you know, the interesting project for the moment. Mm. Yes. And me and the boys have gotten together and talked, and we decided that we were not going to work with you. Mm. Now, none of this was news to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I clapped back. I had a good clap back. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, if you think this is my first rodeo,
yeah.
Okay, I saw this coming a mile away. I had a good clap back. But here's the thing. The problem is my success and how I was being evaluated was based on my ability, the responsibility of me getting along with the my peers was all on me.
Yep.
But I cannot control hate, racism, and sexism.
Nope.
But yet and
That's
still,
right. You can't.
I was the thing that people focused on. Well, you're just not making it work. You need to go find a way, get along with your colleagues better, rather than calling the colleagues in and calling them out on their issues. So
I think that kind of
dynamic is so prevalent and insidious that women, particularly Black women, in toxic male-dominated cultures have to deal with. And so it's exhausting. I can't control how someone feels about me. But yet and still, it's all on me to make it work.
But in that instance too, and like, it's like, I completely agree with you. It's also like, depending upon the circumstance, you know, there are some things that we're in, as I like to say, for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. You know, there is something there that you're to gather or gain, right? And I don't know what that is. And then it's time to go. You know, it's also being
essentially,
you know what? I can't put more energy into trying to resolve this, and I don't want to.
Sometimes the toxic work environment is there to show you that.
So so here's what I tell women now. Sometimes you don't have the liberty of jumping out immediately. It's just a reality. You're taking care of households. Particularly if you're the primary breadwinner, and there are a lot of, not just your own household that's depending on you, there are other households depending on you taking care of.
Which is the reality of a lot of Black women.
It's a lot of, it's reality of most Black women. So hopping out immediately isn't an option. But yes, we must always strategize and position ourselves to be in spaces that support us, but also create spaces. So in situations like this, you know, you can't get, you know, allow that environment to define the narrative even to yourself, because they're so insidious. Sometimes they influence how you see yourself and your own value. So I advise women to be validated internally and neutralize that until you can get out of that space altogether. Because, you know, you can you can survive, but we're not here to just survive. We're here to thrive. Okay? We're brilliant. We're not here to just, you know, check the boxes and be accomplished and successful. We're here to walk fully in our brilliance. And you can only do that in spaces where there's an alignment of who you are, your values and talents, and in environments that see you for who you are and support that. So, in game, walk out of toxic situations as soon as you can. You know, I don't know of any other people that have more grit than Black women. Okay. We know that through and through. But what we struggle with is the grace part. You know, grit alone can get you success, but it can't sustain it.
Yes.
So you have to learn to practice grace. What do you all do in practicing grace, offering yourself grace? Taylor?
I think being patient with me.
Ooh, yes.
Let's take a deep breath. Let's be patient. Like, that deadline is not as hard as you think that it is. Having a headache is like not cool right now.
Right.
And just learning to have patience with myself and understanding when I need to personally take a step back from something.
You know, we talked a little bit earlier about crying, right? And one of the things that I've discovered at this stage in my career is being vulnerable and vulnerable in the sense that I'm okay asking the question if I don't know it, because I
Yes.
Don't care what you think. I'm curious and I want to understand, and I'm seeking to understand by asking the question. And so if that makes me look weak, fine. But what I've learned is that in being vulnerable and asking it, a lot of people end up raising their hand being like, oh my God, I was wondering the same thing, right. you know, and I'm okay, you know, just asking the question. So, yeah. So I think those two things stand out for me.
I really like that, being vulnerable, because in these workspaces, and you've got an X on your back, it's hard. You want to protect yourself, mm-hmm. but giving yourself grace to be vulnerable is beautiful. I love that. What is it for me? Probably it's this, that in my effort to prove my brilliance and excellence and worth in places that want to dismiss me, discount me, and overlook me, I giving 110%. I have decided that I'm going to keep some for me.
Mm.
Some of my soul for me.
Yep.
And that's what grace looks like for me. And that's a wrap for today's episode. If you like what you heard, go ahead and subscribe for us, rate us on Apple Podcasts, and tune in every Friday for your dose of When Magic Happens, and follow us on Instagram at When Magic Happens Podcast. You can find me, Cheryl Jackson, on social media at Cheryl Jackson. That's Cheryl with an E.
You can find me, Jennifer Shaylove Bowers, on Instagram at Being Shaylove.
And you can find me, Taylor Coward, on Instagram at Taylor Coward Online.
When Magic Happens is a production of WBEZ Chicago and part of the NPR Podcast Network. Our truly magical producer is Brianna Garrett. Brendan Benazek is our executive producer. Tracy Brown is chief content officer, engineering by the lovely Maria Lopez. See y'all next week.
This ain't my first rodeo.
This ain't my first rodeo. Boys.
Boys.
That's right. Amen and amen. What the church
amen.
Say?
Amen. Hallelujah.
You said hallelujah. All right.